Good afternoon. You're listening to Campus K News for Monday, November 24th. I'm Taylor Heckert. Southeast Alaska's first competitive commercial Red King crab fishery in 8 years is underway. And as Campus K's Olivia Rose reports, the exceptional starting price came in above expectations for the high-value fishery, which is set to generate an estimated $5 million.
Here at South Harbor, fishermen are walking the docks and putting away gear on a clear afternoon. Petersburg is home to over half of the permit holders for Southeast Alaska's commercial Red King crab fishery, which opened this fall for the first time in nearly a decade.
So far, it went really well.
Adam Messmer is a regional shellfish biologist for the State Department of Fish and Game. He says fishermen have caught around 190,000 pounds of crab so far, and there's still more available to harvest.
I think we're in a good spot with red crab for the time being.
Red King crab is a low-volume, high-value fishery. It last opened in Southeast Alaska in 2017. The catch that year was over 120,000 pounds, worth around $1.2 million at the docks. But 8 years later, the value has skyrocketed to roughly $5 million. Messmer says it came as a surprise.
It's definitely at a historic high.
Selling at $26 to $30 a pound, the Red King crab are worth about $200 a piece. That's around four times the value of the last commercial opening.
To have it come out to start at, you know, $26, $27 was, I think, above everybody's wildest dreams.
Messmer's not sure why the crabs are going for so much money, so I reached out to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Jeremy Woodrow is the executive director.
This is a point where you'd say, you know, historically high, right? But it's great because people are making money and they're making good money. And our fishermen should be rewarded for that.
Woodrow says there's a few things at play in this historically high value, like inflation and rarity. He says there's high demand for the Red King crab, especially around the holidays. But low crab stocks and little harvest opportunity have led to less crab in the marketplace in recent years. He says that drives up the price tag too.
What we have of our crab right now in Alaska, whether it be from Southeast Alaska or from the Bering Sea, is now at a higher value because the demand is still there, but there's not quite as much to go around.
So who's buying these rare crab? Woodrow says that while it's not an everyday meal for most families, some people will splurge to celebrate, be it for the holidays or at high-end restaurants. One local example Woodrow gave is Tracy's Crab Shack in Juneau, where Alaskan Red King crab sold for about $85 a pound before closing for the winter. The historically high value of Southeast Alaska's commercial Red King crab fishery, Woodrow says, is a positive thing for the state, the permit holders who participated, and their communities.
It's exciting to see that fishermen are getting that type of value for their catch. It means that, you know, a little crab goes a long way, especially for crew shares and for individual fishermen. And so you actually don't have to harvest a lot of crab this year to make it worthwhile to go out. And that's wonderful to see.
Messmer, the biologist, says state managers used a new kind of tactic for the Southeast commercial fishery this year. Instead of opening one big area, they split it into several different areas. He says that's because they didn't want all the catch coming out of one spot.
And that seems to be working. We're being able to monitor where those crab are harvested a little bit better than in the past and make decisions on that so we can keep fishing on them in the future.
Messmer says fishermen have been hitting harvest targets and haven't gone dramatically over so far, which he says bodes well for the future. And for now, about 20,000 pounds of harvestable Red King crab are still in the water. In other words, there's over $500,000 left to make. In Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Juneau residents no longer have to pay local sales tax on essential food and residential utilities. Voters in Juneau approved exempting them during this fall's recent municipal election. K2O's Clarice Larson reports what that will look like for residents and businesses in Juneau.
Before Thursday, when you would go to grab some groceries or pay your utility bill, Juneau city government would tax most residents at 5%. But now that tax has dropped down to 0% for everyone, regardless of their income or age. That's because of a ballot measure that was approved by voters during this fall's election to remove the local sales tax on essential food and residential utilities. Phil Govea was buying groceries at Foodland IGA on Wednesday afternoon. He says he's excited for the changes and to see some extra cash back in his pocket.
Yeah, it's going to help me. I'm 70 years old. I'm on a pension, so groceries keep going up. My pension doesn't.
The exemptions officially take effect on Thursday, 30 days after the fall election results were certified. The proposition passed with nearly 70% of voters' approval. Deputy City Manager Robert Barr says the rollout of the exemptions should be pretty hands-off for most residents. He says the city is working with businesses on implementing it, but it may take some time before all retailers are under the new system.
So our goal was to implement this in a way that was as easy for residents as possible. So most residents shouldn't have to do much, if anything.
The exemptions apply to the same food items that qualify under the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP or food stamps. That includes foods like fruits and vegetables, meat and dairy, bread and cereals, and cookies and ice cream. But it doesn't cover hot foods like a rotisserie chicken or meals from a restaurant.
You can think of the food, what qualifies as food, is largely groceries. Things that you would buy from the grocery store and prepare at home, or things that are intended to be consumed off-site.
The utilities exemptions apply to residential electricity, heating oil or propane, water and sewage, and garbage and recycling. Alec Mesdag is the CEO of Alaska Electric Light and Power, or AEL&P, Juneau's sole electricity provider. It serves more than 16,000 customers. He says the logistics of rolling out the exemptions are challenging and complex due to AEL&P's large number of customers and having to verify which accounts are for residential use versus commercial. Despite that, he says the company is actively working with customers to ensure that those who are eligible to receive the exemptions get them as soon as possible.
So what we intend to do is go through our list and, you know, apply the exemption as broadly as possible, but excluding certain accounts that appear to us to be highly likely to be not eligible to receive the exemption.
He says AEL&P is sending out letters to customers to inform them which accounts have received the tax exemption and which have not. And while the exemptions are expected to put some extra cash back into residents' wallets, it in turn means the city is expected to face a $6.4 million hole in its budget this fiscal year. And each year moving forward, the city will face an estimated $12 million revenue loss from both the tax exemption on food and utilities and the separate cap on the city's property tax rate that voters also passed. City officials and the Juneau Assembly will be grappling with potential service cuts in the coming months. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Alaska's state government is increasingly failing to keep up with requirements in state and federal law. That's according to the state's nonpartisan auditor, who delivered her findings to a group of lawmakers last week. Legislative auditor Chris Curtis says she's identified dozens of accounting and compliance issues in her agency's most recent audit. Those range from the Department of Corrections overspending its budget to the Division of Public Assistance failing to process SNAP and Medicaid applications on time. Curtis told the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee that the issue has gotten progressively worse over the past decade. All told, Curtis says her team identified 85 issues in the 2024 fiscal year audit. That's about double what her team found a decade ago, and she offers a few reasons why.
What we're seeing is vacancies, we're seeing turnover, we're seeing poor training, we're seeing a lack of written procedures.
Employee turnover and hiring have been areas of particular interest for legislators seeking to reinstitute a pension system for state employees. Among the issues Curtis spotlighted are errors in the state's procurement process. She says her team pulled samples of state purchases across various departments and found that roughly a third failed to comply with state rules. Curtis says that means either they didn't follow state law or didn't maintain the documentation backing up those purchases.
I think one of the biggest concerns is making sure the state is obtaining the best possible price.
Curtis found the state also failed to bill the federal government for nearly $280 million in pandemic-era federal aid funding in a timely manner. And that means the state lost out on more than $9 million worth of interest it could have earned in the meantime. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration disputes some of the auditor's findings, chalking them up to differences in interpreting state and federal law. Curtis says the report is meant to help state agencies improve and spotlight areas that lawmakers can help them do so. Prince Wales Island in southern southeast Alaska is home to less than 6,000 people, but the sparsely populated island is also home to Alaska's only known arm wrestling club. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, the group has hopes to one day form an arm wrestling league for the entire state.
And my crew was laughing at me because my arms hurt.
Miles outside of Klawock, in a garage-turned-gym, four men stand around a waist-high table with elbow pads and hand pegs. Fueled by a slice of pepperoni pizza, Jeff Andis challenges his buddy, John Arntz, to a match.
You trying to go again, man, or what?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
All right.
The men step up to the table and link hands. There's a momentary struggle until...
There we go. There we go. Oh, yeah.
Andis goes for the win. The bridge construction manager from Thorne Bay is the brainchild behind Prince of Wales Island's new arm wrestling club, POW Arm Wrestling. He started a Facebook group earlier this year to recruit others, and so far, up to a dozen people from across the island have shown up to the group's weekly meetups. Andis says they gather in a different town each week to mingle, talk arm wrestling techniques, and, of course, face off.
The best way to understand arm wrestling is that it's a combat sport. You're just limiting the combat to your hand. And they should really call it hand wrestling because it's probably 80% hand strength and 20% arm strength.
Andis says that because of the anatomy of the hand, mastering the sport is more complex than you'd think. Hand grip and elbow placement have a lot to do with it, as well as your body's posture. He says that honing your technique is a never-ending prospect. Even the pros are still improving. And arm wrestling isn't just a physical activity. It's a social one. Andis says that's important for mental health, especially during the dark winters on the isolated island. He says the weekly meetups are something for the group to look forward to.
Kind of one of the cruxes of humanity is relationships. And there's very, very few people that can function well mentally without relationships with other people. And we find all kinds of things to build those relationships on. And I suppose arm wrestling is just another one of those things.
The sport is what brought Andis and John Arntz together. They live about 40 minutes apart and didn't cross paths before their first arm wrestling meetup. Now, Arntz says they're pretty good friends.
I like hanging out and having something to do that's physically active and it's strenuous and it's, you know, nonviolent and it's, you know, it's just a good time. Good folks meet new guys.
Although Arntz isn't new to the sport, he hadn't done it for years before stumbling upon the new Facebook group. He says that some people may associate arm wrestling with bars and drinking, but the group on Prince of Wales Island promotes a sober environment. Andis, the group's founder, says setting that tone is important for newcomers.
And that's a big thing to me, is because I want it to be a positive environment and I want it to be something just good for one another, and sobriety is a big part of that.
To Andis's knowledge, there isn't a single established arm wrestling group in Alaska. He says much of the state's arm wrestling activities are sporadic and in bars, like the post-Iditarod competition at a watering hole in Nome. So Andis and his group hope to put together an Alaska league. He says representatives from the World Arm Wrestling League have looked for people in Alaska to form a group to compete internationally, although that hasn't come to fruition yet.
I mean, it's a long-shot goal, but, I mean, whoever reached a long-shot goal without making it?
For now, though, Andis's main goal for the group is growing it. As more members join, he hopes to host a tournament on the island next summer and take part in local fundraisers. Later on, he'd like to host a southeast-wide competition in Juneau. Reporting from Prince of Wales Island, I'm Hunter Morrison.
For Campus K, I'm Taylor Heckert.